Earlham Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello again and welcome to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And it's a big, important time of the year. We're on the cusp of Movember, where lots of money gets raised for various charities, and it's focused originally around prostate cancer. A man who's done an awful lot in various different guises to raise money for that great cause is David Kirk. He has been in various guises a match day host for the Wasps Rugby Club and also a premiership match official at the highest level in rugby union. And through his own endeavours and a great network of contacts, he's raised great awareness and an awful lot of money too for various good causes, not least Prostate Cancer UK. But to tell us more about his journey and how we should all be more diligent in our awareness of our own personal health, we are delighted now to welcome to the show David Kirk. David, good evening. How are you?
Tony, fine. I'm happy to say I'm still waking up every day and in fine health. And I've even had COVID, believe it or not. But that was right at the beginning and thankfully not too seriously compared to others. And yeah, all good, thank you. What about your good self? You okay?
I'm A-okay. I think it's always important to appreciate our blessings at this particular time.
Quite right.
I try to do that daily, and I'm very honoured and privileged to do what I do for Verulam Sports. So, by and large, I have got zero complaints, zero grumbles, but it is a challenging time, and we'll get into that. David, first of all, obviously, again, it's just gave you a little bit of an intro there. But maybe people haven't encountered you in the past and up until now. Can you just give us a bit of an insight into your playing career and then moving into a premiership match official in the world of rugby union?
Yeah, sure. And my playing career, I was pretty hopeless, really. I played for Wimbledon Rugby Club. I was a scrum half. I joined there at the age of, I think it was 17. Uh-huh. I played in the first team for quite a few years and I captained the second team. And actually, the most fun I got was running a Sunday side called the Heineken Refreshers, believe it or not. And we won loads of competitions. It was. And we used to do a Heineken Hucker before a game and give all our opponents a can of Heineken, hoping they'd drink it before we started. And but actually, no, we were a successful Sunday side and we always said that we would never kick the ball. So we never, apart from kicking off, we never kicked the ball. We ran it, every penalty we ran it. So it was a great fun rugby and lots of fun. But
I think the barbarian spirit there. I love
it. Well, it was barbarian spirit and a lot of fun. My playing career came to an end after a skiing accident, which put paid to my knee. And I was 36 or 37 or something at the time. And I thought, well, what am I going to do now? I can't not do anything. Mm-hmm. And I was down at my old club, let's say Wimbledon, and I was watching the Vets team play. And referee didn't turn up. And someone said, oh, come on, Kirky, you come and referee. You were a gobby scrum half. And I thought, well, that's nice. And always trying to referee it from scrum half. And I did. And I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed doing it. And I thought, do you know what? This is a way to stay involved. And so I was just going to do it down at the club. And then someone... one day, someone didn't turn up for the first team, believe it or not. And they said, well, you're here. There's no referee. You're going to have to do the first team. I thought, oh, my God, talk about it. And I thought, well, OK. And I just said to my mates in the first team, right, don't take the piss because I'm going to give this a game. Without me, you won't get a game. So
there
just respect what I'm and allow me. So I did. And it was successful. And it happened to have, there was an assessor there that day who was due to see the guy who didn't turn up. He saw me and said, well, why aren't you doing this properly? And I said, well, okay. And then, and so I did, and I did it, and I went up to, you go through a series of steps, and then I was the youngest ever premiership touch judge when I got onto the panel. I rose through the ranks pretty quickly and had a fantastic time doing it. And I took part in the Commonwealth Games in 2002, the 2007 Rugby World Cup qualifiers, under 21 World Cup. So it's great fun. And actually, you didn't get injured as much as you did when you were playing. So there you are.
David, what a rugby journey that's been for you. And I was talking to Roger East, ex-Premier League referee, quite recently. And we forget, don't we? Everybody, like you say, if you're a gobby scrum half or in any sporting context, whatever it might be, you know best, don't you? Everybody does. But you're quite right. Without the referee or umpire or whatever it may be, there simply is no sport for us all to enjoy. So they are vital. Yeah. I guess, what would your message be, maybe for people listening to this, who are possibly coming to the end of their careers or at the other end of the spectrum, like you were, very fast-ranked, fast-tracked up the ranks, to maybe consider getting involved with the world of refereeing?
I think, look, everybody thinks, what am I do post-retirement? And you're a long time retired. And it's a great way to stay involved. And it doesn't matter what level it's at, whether it's a premiership level, it's a grassroots level for your local club and so on. It's fun. It is fun. Mm. And the great thing about rugby refereeing is there's a lot of respect for the referee, and you don't get a lot of chat back. I'm not going to say what other sports, but I think it's pretty obvious. But, you know, I tried my hand at refereeing other sports and I stopped after one game. I thought, I gave out 7 yellow cards for swearing at me, and I gave one bloke a red card. He said, you can't do that. I said, well, I am. You can't call me that. And he said, well, we'll do it every week. I said, well, not with me, you don't. And I thought, I don't need that on a Sunday. I stuck with refereeing guys and you know, just having a laugh with them as well, even on the pitch, you know, having a laugh. Even at premiership level, you'd have a laugh with the guys because life's too serious.
Indeed. And
especially now, it's so serious. So if people are thinking, having a go, have a go. And if you don't like it, fair enough, but give it a go, because you never know. You might enjoy it, and one day you might end up on the premiership, or just keep doing it for your local club and enjoy being part of the sort of the rugby community and fraternity and sorority.
Truly love that. And again, I think it's an important message for many to consider. You're dead right, David. One of the problems with our world is that sometimes we forget how short life is and we do take ourselves a touch seriously. However, there is a serious context to our conversation, it has to be said. I know, obviously, we've discussed we're coming up to Movember. They do great things for a world of charities these days, but it focused originally around prostate cancer. Can you tell me a little bit about your personal journey with prostate cancer and obviously what that inspired you to do subsequently?
Absolutely. I back in 2013, actually, go back even further. 2003, the week after England won the Rugby World Cup, believe it or not, I had a heart attack and I was the fittest I've ever been. I was 46 years old, and a day before I was due to be doing London Irish against Sale, and thank God it wasn't on the day because I would have gone. I had backache. It turned out to be a heart attack. And the reason I tell you that is because it made me aware of my health, if you like. And in 2013, I read an article in Men's Magazine about prostate cancer. And I'd never been on my radar. And I thought, oh, wow, I wonder if I should get myself checked. And I was the right age.
Yes, indeed.
Checked. I was 55 then. I thought, right, maybe I should get checked. And of course, nobody wants that test, do they? But I thought, no, I'm going to get... Anyway, I went and had the test and went back for the results. And my wife and I were going back. And it was June the 11th, 2013. I said to 3 o'clock, I said to her, right, we'll be in there. We'll be 5 minutes. I had no symptoms. Okay, remember, I had no symptoms. And actually, all my tests were negative. And I had one last test, which I went to see the nurse specialist for. I went in and she said, David, unfortunately, we found cancer. And there were 5 words I never expected to hear. And I just used the F word. That's the only word I said. I burst into tears. And I said to my wife, Jane, she's a psychologist, luckily. I think I'm more of a case study for her than anything else. But she listened to what the nurse was saying. And anyway, I went on this journey and... it was quite fortuitous in a way, and I'll tell you why if we've got time. There it was, and there. So I was given options as to what treatments to take forward, and I had decided for a removal of the prostate because I thought if it's out of me, so is the cancer. And the day I went to meet the specialist, I wore my international referee's tracksuit because I said to my wife, I said, these guys all love rugby. And if I can get just one small percentage advantage, it's worth doing. I walked in, bear in mind, I was working at Wasps at the time. I walked into his surgery and he said, oh, are you a referee? And I said, well, actually, I retired a few years ago. He said, I'm a Wasps season ticket holder.
Small world syndrome.
Back of the net. I said to him, thank God you're not Harlequins. Anyway, he just, we talked about Wasps for about 10 minutes. I said, look, I don't mean to be rude, but could we talk about my cancer for a minute? He said, you'll be fine. He said, do you think Christian Wade's going to get back in the England squad? I said, mate. But actually, it was great because it gave me a confidence in the guy. He was going to look after me, if you like. And so I had the operation in the September, had the prostate removed, and I got the all clear in the November, and that's 2013. And then I got involved with Movember and Prostate Cancer UK, the charity, well, the two charities, for that November.
You know, a great story there, David. I really appreciate you sharing that so candidly. I've been very fortunate, I think, because I've experienced the atmosphere of two Jeff Stelling walks marches for men over the last couple of years. And I got inspired to do that because somebody I've been involved with the kind of fraternity of sports here in St. Albans. Likewise, was a previous sufferer. Great, great guy. He's raised tens of thousands of pounds. And, you know, I got talking to him on air and essentially blurted out, kind of didn't engage brain before speaking, "I'll help you, I'll get on the march."
You
and
fool.
Once it's stayed there, once it's out there for the universe, you've got to be a man of your word, don't you, David? So yeah. I kind of followed through. But the thing that kind of really, really staggered me, and I know so much is being done to raise awareness, to encourage people, like you say, you had no discernible symptoms. If you're in that age bracket, worth testing. But the point is, this guy, Phil Coates, told me, and it still makes me shudder, that every 45 minutes, a man would die from dint of prostate cancer. And obviously, a massive fan of sport as I am, obviously, as you know, rugby is a 40-minute half, but the quote-unquote beautiful game, football, is a 45-minute half. And at that moment, every time a referee blew up for half-time and then full-time, kind of shuddered, quite frankly. So again, it was important for me to follow through on my words. And as I say, I know a massive amount of things are being done and now a massive amount of awesome money is being raised. But that still staggers me, David. What's your quick thoughts on that and a call to arms for us all to become more conscious of this?
Right, well, let me give you another couple of facts. One in eight white men will get prostate cancer in their lives. One in four black men. And they don't know why the difference and so on and so forth. And it's scary. And as you say, that those deaths are the ones that I think one man is diagnosed every 12 minutes with prostate cancer. And it's the single biggest killer biggest killing cancer of all cancers. My take is the fact that most men are too scared to go and get the check. Mm-hmm. And they believe it's a sign of weakness. They certainly don't want to finger up the backside. But actually, the way I look at that is 5 seconds of a finger a little bit uncomfortable. It's not bigger things come out than that finger going in, frankly. and 5 seconds of a bit of uncomfortableness could give you an extra 20 years of life.
Absolutely.
I could have gone on. I had no symptoms, remember? And all my tests were negative. So I was really lucky for it to be picked up. It was picked up just by chance, but to the diligence of a specialist who gave me the finger test. And I could have gone on right now and not felt anything. There was nothing wrong with me. Nothing wrong with me. And I remember the day my wife drove me into hospital. I burst into tears going, and I said, I don't feel ill. And I know I'm going to come out feeling like crap when I come out of here. Mm. And yet I don't feel there's anything wrong with me. But it would have got me eventually. You know, most men die with prostate cancer.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily die because of it, but most men are fine with it. And it's perceived to be the old man's disease. And the reason for that is not enough men get checked.
Yeah.
And therefore, if they did, the statistics would show that the age would come right down because more men are getting checked today. You should get checked from the age of 40, 45. And if you're, by the way, if it's in your family, you're four times more likely to get it. So, you know, it's really important to get checked, really. Because if you don't get checked and you have it, it could be too late. If you do get checked, happy days. The worst day of my life turned out to be the best day of my life, the day I was told I got cancer, because it caught in time to do something about it.
But also, credit to you for having the proactive spirit to get in there and get it checked, but kind of overcoming that sense of maybe pride, certain machismo that is associated with us men sometimes. Yep. Whatever it was, you had the gumption to do that, and I think it's a guiding light to us all. The key underlying, I guess, moral of that story for me, David, is it highlights very palpably that ignorance is not bliss. That you can just deny and just kind of think everything's fine. And like, you were yourself a living, breathing example. Yeah, discernible symptoms. But we simply don't know what's going on inside. Yeah. As a consequence, what have you got to lose from getting over ignorance and into a state where you can move on, better or worse, of total clarity? That's the key message I think I picked up from your
end. And I think the one thing you have got to lose by not getting checked is your life. Mm. It's as simple as that.
It is. You're dead right. You're dead right.
On that basis, what's not to, you know, why wouldn't you go and get checked? You know what I mean? But it was great because actually I went back to Wasps, the guys there, if you're happy for me to carry on. And they, I told a couple of the guys there, and they jumped straight in on it and got in on the Movember movement. And I know you wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely, because it is a right around the corner, isn't it? The wonderful movement that is Movember.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, what's been astonishing, just kind of a little bit of background research into you, David. Again, that wonderful rugby fraternity coming together. Things that the guys at Wasps did. I know that you are on, for instance, BT's kind of rugby club with, you know, I thought it looked brilliant, a kind of dodgeball type.
Environments,
which is great. But seriously, again, the rugby world uniting around this and raising serious amounts of money. Do you have an idea roughly how much you have been helpful and contributed to raising over the years?
No, what I do know is what we raised as the dodgeball team. That year, Wasps got right behind it that first year when I was diagnosed and had the operation and so on. And to be fair, I didn't push it any further because I thought, you know what, you can only push these things so far. And there's so many great charities that are all deserving out there. But that year, all the boys got involved. James Haskell was captain. I think he was. And he's a good mate of mine. He just said, right, come on, let's get in on this. And what can we do? And then we got, you know, other clubs, Northampton with Dylan Hartley were heavily involved with their own. Dills was really heavily involved with Movember because his mate was one of the founders of Movember. So there was this league table of the Premiership clubs, and we came second behind Northampton. I can't remember how much, but myself through mine, you know, the rest of the team obviously raised a lot of money, was 27,000.
Unbelievable.
You know, from a standing start over a month was pretty incredible. And just, you know, the whole Movember movement raised millions of pounds. And of course, Movember is not just about prostate cancer, it's about mental well-being, which is so important these days as well, you know. But yeah, we had a dodgeball team and we won the tournament and everyone thought it was a fix. We had a great team out there. And in fact, actually, rugby players are the worst dodgeball players because they're so big.
It's quite a big target. I'm thinking James Haskell. He's not a small man, is he? Goodness
me. Exactly. He wasn't the biggest by any stretch. But so it was really great that they jumped in. And we did it 2 years. We did the dodgeball thing. And I went and had my moustache shaved off down at Bristol Rugby Club at halftime at a match there. And I had my moustache was black and gold in Wasps colours. And the boys were just doing crazy things.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great.
And we are now on the cusp of Movember 2020.
Yeah.
Maybe the most challenging year for us all, both personally and collectively. We'll talk about the challenges of sport just in a moment. But you rightly say there are massive, a great array of massively important charities. But this does tremendous work. I would imagine, though, charities have faced an acute difficulty at this time with people concerned about monetary flow for understandable reasons. Can you give us an insight into a few things in Movember 2020 and maybe just raise awareness of their great website?
Well, I think, you know, people need to go and have a look at the Movember website and have a look what they're doing and how they can get involved. But I think you're absolutely right in that the charitable giving this year, quite understandably, has fallen through the floor. And of course it has. You know, how could it not, if you know what I mean? It's really, really tough year. But Movember, you go to Movember.com. It's got everything on there that it's doing. And it is about growing a mow and that sort of thing. And they've got all these challenges you can do and get your mow up on the website and have a look and, you know, do it in your own way and so on. And just getting to, of course, you can't really get together now and have evenings. That's the most critical difficulty, I suppose. You know, it's just impossible because of the social distancing issues. Who knows where we're going and how far we're going with it. I mean, you can do the thing about Move for Movember, which is about running or walking 60K a month and get people to sponsor you. And that, but again, it's tough. You know, I'm not sure how easy it would be for me to go to someone and say, right, just do us a moment, thing, would you? I'm going to go and do 60. They can say, mate, I haven't got any money. I'm out of a job. I've been furloughed. So it is really difficult. And I think, like all charities, it's going to suffer this year. The only thing I would say is actually go and get checked. That's the best thing you can possibly do, because actually they want to eradicate prostate cancer, and that wouldn't cost any money, you know, if my prostate cancer went and they had a 10-year plan, Prostate Cancer UK, to get rid of prostate cancer. And the money that Prostate Cancer UK raises goes into research mainly, because that's the thing. Nobody knows why. Mm-hmm. Why, for instance, it's 1 in 8 white men, 1 in 4 black men. Why you get it at all? If Indeed. You say it's because you eat hamburgers, then stop eating hamburgers. But you can't, you know, so it's very difficult. So the Movember movement is going to be tough this year. It's going to be very difficult. You can, as I say, do the 60 km a month thing, grow a mo and get sponsored to do it. But you're not going to be sitting on the tube looking at people winking because you know they're doing it, because you won't be on a tube.
What I would say, you're dead right. But one thing that has really impressed me, talking to people from all different kind of walks of life for Verum Sport Podcasting in this challenging period, is just how indomitable the human spirit is.
Yeah.
How very generous we are capable of being, and how ingenious we are at pivoting and adjusting to these remarkably challenging times.
Definitely.
So, David, I am inclined to agree. I think all charities need our support, perhaps more than ever. We understand naturally that that could be rather difficult to even justify at this time. But even little things that you can do, get innovative with it. Every single penny makes a massive, massive difference when it all adds up. So definitely I'd encourage people to check out that Movember website, and also be diligent and check out the Prostate Cancer UK website too.
Yeah, it was prostatecanceruk.org and movember.com. And the Prostate Cancer UK was fantastic for me, because actually, when I got diagnosed, the first thing I did was went onto Dr. Google.
Indeed, which is the worst. As we all do.
As you all do. And it was the worst thing I could have done, because, you know, half the websites told me I'd be dead before dinner time, and the rest said I'd live until I was 250. But actually, I got hold of a guy, I rang them up, and one of the nurses called me back, a guy called John from Glasgow, and we spoke for 3 hours. He listened to me crying, angry, all emotions gone. And I became an ambassador for Prostate Cancer UK, and I never met the guy till last year, and we met at the offices of Prostate Cancer UK, and we both cried, because it was such an emotional moment, because that guy talked me down off the bridge, so to speak.
Yes, you know? Yes, I hear you.
I was gone, and I just thought, you know, but he was brilliant. So, you know, those conversations can still happen. And again, it's get over yourself. The most difficult conversation, I do a lot of talks out for Prostate Cancer UK. I did a talk on a building site, and this guy came up to me and said, mate, I don't want to go and have the finger test, because people are going to think there's something weird about me. I said, mate, the most brave thing you can do. He said it's a weakness, that's right. And I said that you are the strongest person in this room if you go and get a test.
Amen.
Because all these I want to get, oh, I'm all right. You know what? You're brave in my book.
I think that's such a powerful message, David. I think it's really coming through so well for your own lived experiences. Yeah. Before we circle back and remind everybody about these crucial messages, just talk to me briefly, though, about the challenges for sport in particular, and in general, and rugby in particular. Obviously, by this pandemic we're all living through.
Yeah.
I know, for instance, going back a few months, lots of job losses at the RFU. Obviously, rugby as a sport, probably the second biggest in terms of fan base in the UK behind football. But ultimately, an awful lot of the kind of business model that professional rugby lives by is contingent on bums on seats and fan engagement, which is clearly, for understandable reasons, mitigated at this time. So give me a bit of a flavour of the kind of challenges the rugby fraternity at the elite levels facing in this CV19 era.
Well, it's interesting you say at the elite level, because it's facing it at every level.
Yeah.
And, elite gets the television package, they get the sponsors and so on. And who knows, you know, if and when spectators can get back in. Actually, below elite level, the championship level and the next two levels, they're the ones who are really suffering, because they have got absolutely no income. You know, the season ticket money, I don't know how the clubs have played. I think they've said, you know, we can roll it over to next year and so on for all clubs. I have no idea what's going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see clubs going out of business.
Indeed, sadly so. Because the thing is, it's so much uncertainty at this time.
Yeah.
We speak very regularly with the old Albanians, who were sort of level just below championship maybe 2 years ago. They've just gone to the next level down. But Saracens utilise their facilities at Holmes Park. Tremendous facilities. And I'm actually going to chat to their head of comms there tonight. But I was just talking to him at the weekend. There's no likelihood of play this season. Certainly this calendar year, and massive question marks over next season. Yeah. And again, they're not professional players, but there is a little bit of money that comes in. But, you know, again, it's about the people at the bar in social situation, enjoying the whole atmosphere and ethos of rugby that's going to be really impacting them. So you're dead right. Obviously, the elite, in many ways, in a much healthier position than the grassroots level.
In a bizarre way, it sort of is, even though you're talking about huge numbers. But you will see elite clubs. I'm pretty sure there will be some that will fall by the wayside because it's unsustainable.
Yeah.
If you haven't got people coming through the turnstiles and all the ancillary sales you get from that, well, where are you going to get your money from? And you've still got the wage bills to pay. And you get a situation like, for instance, Wasps in the semi-final of the Premiership when they played at home.
Indeed.
2 weeks ago. They've got a 32,000 seater stadium. Of course, not allowed to have anyone in the stadium, but they sold out their hospitality packages in the hospitality room. But they, bizarrely, and they had a few hundred people there, had to pull the screens down over the windows so they couldn't watch the team on the pitch through the glass outside. They had to watch them on the screens in the stadium. So they got a bit of revenue from that, but nothing near. They would have had 30,000 people there for that semi-final, you know. And so you look at the revenue that's lost on that and everything else, it's just not sustainable. And who knows? You know, rugby's a difficult enough game to sustain anyway. With no income, it's impossible. I mean, they rely on benefactors who've got a lot of money who love rugby. You know, Nigel Ray for years has been involved at Saracens. Yep. You've got the people down at Bath and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's not a business you'd really get involved in unless you've got a lot of money to throw at it and happy not to see it come back potentially. Now, even worse.
David, we've been talking, of course, about the kind of overall context of our time, which is the CV19 era. Have you still got kind of a finger on the pulse with Wasps, who obviously we are waiting to find out their CV19 situation and their prospects for the upcoming or scheduled final? I think it's potentially Bristol waiting in the wings.
It is, yeah.
Is there any further updates that you are able to share at all?
There were four players and three backroom staff, and then today it's been announced four more players have gone down with it. So, you know, that's eight players. Don't know who the players are. They could be academy, but even the academy's pretty strong at the moment. But it's unfortunate. Exeter wouldn't want to win it against a weakened Wasps, I'm sure, because everyone say, well, it wasn't the first team. Wasps would love to play it, but it would be difficult for them. Bristol, you know, should they go into it from third position? Well, I suppose the rules say they should. I mean, they're probably still on drinking after their win on Friday night, you know, and Exeter, well, neither of them will be, I suppose. They knew before the weekend they could potentially be up there. It is just what it is. You know, we're in unprecedented times. I feel really sorry for the Wasps boys, particularly any of those who may not be there next season or whatever, because they've done so well since coming back in the second period after lockdown.
Yeah,
to win, I think, 10 out of 11 games or whatever it was. They've done incredibly well. And Lee Blackett, as the coach, has done an amazing job having taken over and so on. And just, you don't often get the chance to play in a final, you know, and to have that taken away through no fault of your own is tragic, really. So I don't know. To answer your question, no, I don't know any more than what I've already told you. I think there are more tests being done tomorrow and decision will be made on Wednesday. And it doesn't leave a lot of time for the likes of Bristol to get extra, know they're going to be playing somebody.
Yes.
So that's okay. They can train as normal. And they'll have had probably yesterday and today off and back into training tomorrow. And they won't care who they're playing anyway. They'll just know they're playing. And it'll be either a black and gold or it'll be a team in blue and white that turns up to play against them.
Hey, fingers crossed that everything comes through as we'd like it to and Wasps get a chance to challenge Exeter for the title this very weekend at an empty Twickenham, which is so eerie. David, it's been unreal and really thrilling and kind of humbling to enjoy your company tonight. Could you just, in closing, reaffirm some of the key messages that we've discussed, particular to kind of prostate cancer awareness?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed being on it. And hopefully, if this makes one person get checked, then it's been valuable, particularly, you know, God forbid they find out they've got something wrong with them, but they find they've got something in time. Look, the youngest ever person diagnosed was 9 years old. This is not an old people's disease. With your black, white or whatever, if you've got it in your family and it's been your dad or a granddad or whatever,
you are, I think it's three or four more times likely to get this. So go and get checked. What have you got to lose? If I said to you, you know, that whole thing, as I said earlier, 5 seconds of a finger up your backside, give you another 20 years of life. It's a no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer. So get checked. Be brave. Be a hero. Go and get checked. Talk to your mates about it when you do get down to the pub eventually, because actually there is no shame in admitting that you've had a test. There's no shame in admitting you've got it, had it, or whatever. I have a friend who had it. It spread. He caught it too late. It spread. And thanks to coronavirus, he passed away because his chemotherapy for the spread cancer was halted and he died. And so, you know, not to put too black a picture on it, go and get checked. It may just save your life.
David, honestly, you have been heroic in kind of getting out there and very candidly communicating your true story. A reminder to all, when David had this, it was kind of towards the peak of his own physical fitness, displaying no palpable or discernible symptoms. It literally can be affecting you as we speak. So if you're listening in, particularly if you know or suspect even that you have some kind of family history when it comes to prostate cancer, it really is urging you now to kind of get that checked out, and then you're in a position where you're no longer ignorant, you can move forward and progress.
And but Tony, David, can I just say one
please,
more thing?
Go ahead. Sorry, please go ahead.
One thing we haven't spoken about is symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, symptoms could be a range of things, ranging from getting up peeing a lot at night. Now, if you've been out for a skinful of beer the night before, there's every chance you will get up and pee a lot. But, you know, if you're peeing a lot at night, you might need to get that checked. If you go to pee and you can't start, you might need to get that checked. If you go to pee and you can't stop and you keep having to force more out, you might need to go and get that checked. Now, if you go and get checked, you've got those symptoms, it doesn't mean you've necessarily got prostate cancer, but you can rule it out. You might have an infection called prostatitis, which is an inflammation of prostate and so on. So it's best to get checked. So if you're thinking, oh, actually, do you know what? I've been going up. And actually, any ladies listening to this, if your other halves are getting up a lot at night, tell them to go and get checked. So it's just look at the symptoms that you might have. Go on to prostatecanceruk.org, check out the symptoms there. And, you know, as I said earlier, without being too dramatic, you might save your life.
Awesome. David, once again, a massive thank you for your time and company tonight. I would like to take a moment to wish you every continued success, health and happiness. Fingers crossed, good luck to your Wasps as it maybe maps out as we'd like to hope for the weekend. But for now, once again, a big thank you. Massive thanks.
Thank you very much.